Interview commenced 5:56 p.m. 17th of January. Inspector Lockett in attendance.
The interrogation room was stuffy. I wanted a glass of water. I wanted to phone Helena. I wanted to know who reported me to the police. But I couldn't afford to waste any words.
Name?
Asked Lockett. Amias Todd.
Age?
23.
Address?
I frowned. They knew my address. They picked me up there.
Address?
Lockett repeated. His eyes were grey and as hard as slate. Apartment 216, Fishbone Road, East Sludgeton.
Occupation?
Gardener. Lockett leant back in his chair.
Not a very high-paying occupation, is it? Yet we hear you've been very talkative lately. More so than a man of your means. Want to tell me where you got the money to pay for those words?
I shook my head. Lockett tapped his tongue chip against his teeth.
Amias, you're facing some very serious charges here. Theft, conspiracy, sedition. It's in your best interests to cooperate.
I was conscious of my own tongue chip, which felt hot and heavy in my mouth. Direct line to my bank account. Each word cost one ruble. Always been that way on Skaz. You got the chip on your 16th birthday, and from then on, you paid to speak. And I only had a few hundred rubles to my name. I didn't want to be speaking unnecessary words in the week before my wedding. I needed to save my cash for the vows and my groom's toast. It was all right for the coppers. They got a special bonus to compensate them for interrogating suspects. But me, I was headed towards the red. Writing was no good either. You had to have a special license for that, issued by the state, and it was expensive. Too much for the likes of me. Lockett sighed.
If you refuse to speak, your silence will be taken as an admission of guilt. You could be fined, sent to prison, maybe even receive a permanent laryngectomy, courtesy of the state. Is that what you want?
I shook my head.
Then start talking.
So I did.
Big Finish presents Doctor Who Short Trips. Free Speech by Uzaini Puzinjak. Read by Jacob Dudman.
Wanted to buy ring for Helena.
Helena?
Fiance. I decided to take a chance. Call her?
No. Keep going.
Rich family. Me, poor. Wanted to propose. No money for ring.
Helena was used to the finer things in life.
Her family owned a mansion on Sunset Hill. Smart house, complete with a home assistant. It's always, Ariana, turn up the lights, and Ariana, play some smooth jazz. All those words are never a thought for the cost.
Been together long? Asked Lockett.
6 months.
Lockett crossed his arms. Bloke like you from the wrong side of the tracks dating a rich girl. How did you meet?
Working. At her house. I didn't give Lockett the details. How I was tending the flower patch beneath her bedroom window when I first heard Helena. She was singing. Singing! Voice like melted caramel. Imagine having so much money that you could afford to sing. I remember listening, spellbound. She glanced out and saw me. up to my elbows in muck. But I suppose she liked the look of me. I'm quite strong, thanks to pushing a lawnmower and juggling bags of manure every day. Helena stopped singing and came outside with a glass of water.
Hello. We haven't properly met, have we? I'm Helena. Thought you might like a drink.
Thanks. I'm Amias, I replied. Our hands brushed as I took the glass.
What are you planting? They look absolutely divine.
Peonies.
How lovely. They're prettier than carnations, which are so dull, don't you think? Are peonies easy to tend?
I nodded. Just need sun, moist soil. This conversation alone meant I'd have to skip tomorrow's takeaway coffee, but I didn't care for once. Helena smiled, like she understood. We started meeting each other in the evenings. We talked for hours. Well, Helena did most of the talking. She'd tell me about everything. Her family, friends, new car, favorite clothes, love of music. She never pressed me for a response or an opinion. Not that I could afford it.
You're a great listener, Amias,
she said. I took that as a compliment. Pretty soon, I decided I wanted to marry her.
So you wanted to buy her a ring, but you didn't have enough cash, said Lockett. What happened then?
Best mate got us into card game.
Go back a step. What's your mate's name?
I stayed silent. Didn't want to get Marley in more trouble with the authorities.
You must answer, Amias. Give me the name.
Marley Evans. Lockett scribbled the name on his notepad, underlined it with three slashes of his pen.
Marley Evans? The young lady who's been making all those divisive speeches on behalf of the garrulous liberation?
I nodded. The aim of the garrulous liberation, or GLIB for short, was to abolish the tongue chip and introduce free speech for everyone on SCAS. Sometimes you saw their posters, which featured a picture of a bunny and GLIB's motto, Let Us Rabbit On. Until recently, GLIB was small fry, few members and never enough money to properly promote its cause.
We'll come back to Marley shortly, said Lockett. For now, tell me about this card game.
Four-card blag at Lucky Trillium Hotel.
That's a classy joint. How did you get into the game?
Marley worked at hotel, pulled some strings.
Did both of you attend this game, or just you?
Both. I remembered how excited we were when Marley got us spots at the table. High-stakes game, a chance to win some dosh. Me to buy Helena a ring. Marley to raise funds for GLIB. Any winnings, we'd split 50-50.
So you and Miss Evans went along to the game. And you won some money. That it?
Not quite.
Then explain, from the top, when did this game take place?
13th December.
The 13th? The Friday?
Said Lockett.
Was it an unlucky night for you, Amias?
I shook my head, thinking back to that evening. Marley and I, all dressed up, meeting in the hotel lobby. She'd ditched her usual denim jacket and chunky boots for a halter neck dress and heels. I borrowed my granddad's blazer and tie. We gave each other the thumbs up and made our way upstairs to the room. A squat little robot wheeled up to greet us at the door. An electronic dealer.
Entry fees, please.
It intoned, opening its mouth. I fed it 5,000 rubles in notes, nearly all my life savings. It swallowed, beaked, then extended a flat tray-like tongue, on which sat a stack of chips. I scooped them up and took a seat at the table. While Marley paid her entry fee, I took a gander at the other player. A bearded man in a fur-collared coat. Further back in the shadows stood a heavy-set bloke with a scar stretching from lip to ear. He gave me the creeps. The bearded man clicked his fingers and Scarface stepped forward to pour him a cup of tea from the silver teapot in front of him.
Besides you and Miss Evans, who else was present at the game?
Asked Lockett. Bloke called Maxim Gaverit and his lackey.
Lockett raised his eyebrow at this. Mr. Gaverit is well known to us. Had you met him before the night of the 13th?
No.
Anyone else?
The doctor.
Just the doctor?
I nodded.
This doctor didn't give their full name.
I shook my head.
Could you describe them for me?
Tall guy, skinny, brown hair sticking up, pinstripe suit. Thought he was rich.
Why'd you say that?
Talked a lot. Boy, did he ever. I thought back to the entrance the doctor made on that night. I had asked Marley the same question. Anyone else coming? She'd held up one finger. Professor Mudross.
Change of plan!
That voice. Clear, ringing, cheeky. The doctor.
Professor Mudross can't make it tonight,
he said, striding into the room.
She was unexpectedly called away. Last minute invitation to give a presentation on giant succulents at this year's International Conference on Botany. Luckily, I've arranged to take her place.
The bearded man, Gaverit, frowned.
Scares doesn't have any giant succulents.
Should be a very innovative presentation, then.
The doctor thrust a wad of cash into the robot's mouth.
Entry fee. Is this my seat here?
He shrugged off his brown overcoat.
Oh, look, chips. Love chips, especially the hot ones. Nice and fresh, with a pinch of salt. I'm the doctor, by the way. And you are?
He nodded at the rest of us. Amius Todd, I said, mentally cursing this man for making me introduce myself. I needed to save my words for the game. Marley Evans, muttered Marley. The bearded man stared at the doctor for a long moment without blinking.
Maxim Gaverit,
he said eventually.
Brilliant,
said the doctor. He gathered his chips and sat.
Shall we crack on with the game then? Never played Blag before. More into Snap myself, loads of fun, and all you need are a loud voice and quick reflexes. Very similar to the game of Beggar My Neighbour. But imagine trying to shout that every time someone turns up a pair.
I exchanged glances with Marley, who was clearly thinking the same as me. What a gob. The game began. Our robot dealer spitting four cards face down onto the table in front of each player. I got the three of daggers, five of goblets, cavalier of gems, and the ace of daggers. Not bad. Until I remembered that in four-card Blag, aces are low on weekdays. I glanced at the others. Gaverit's face was impassive. But Marley was biting her lip, and the doctor was frowning. Concentration? Disappointment? I wasn't sure. We placed our bets, then the trading began. I exchanged my ace of daggers, hoping for one of the fours to make a streak. Instead, I got the dratted two of onions. Gaverit's face held the glimmer of a smirk, and I decided to fold. One tenth of my money gone already. I tried to stay positive, picturing Helena wearing my ring.
Raise,
said Gaverit, shoving another stack of chips into the centre. He clicked his fingers and Scarface refreshed his cup.
Ah, good old tea, said the doctor. I suppose you brought enough to share with the rest of us?
No,
snapped Gaverit.
Not that our host here can drink tea anyways.
The doctor nodded at the robot.
Dealer droids, Model A, don't react well to the tannins and flavonoids. Turns them a bit balmy. Think of a dustbin whizzing everywhere, bumping into things.
No one spoke. I hated to be rude, but I couldn't afford conversation at a time like that.
You lot aren't very talkative,
remarked the doctor.
As chatty as a pack of garden gnomes.
In response, Marley stuck out her tongue. The doctor looked confused.
Is that a computer chip?
One word, one drivel, I explained. The doctor's eyes widened.
You lot pay to speak, and that chip keeps track.
Marley and I nodded.
Doesn't seem fair,
said the doctor.
Get on with the game, growled Gavarit. Can you beat my pair of deadly sins, Doctor?
He flipped over his cards, revealing among them the Seven of Daggers and the Seven of Gems. The Doctor turned his cards, which included the Ten of Onions and Ten of Roses.
I believe my pair of cockles beats your pair of deadly sins. Means I've won this round.
He scooped up the chips as Gavarit flushed an ugly shade of puce.
Amius?
Asked Lockett, recalling me back to the present. Game went for hours. Doctor won most hands. It was the Doctor whose luck seemed to be in. The cards fell his way time and time again. He got the straights, the streaks, the flushes and the full houses. He got the double pluggers and the triple whammies. He got the shoot the moons and the scatter the stars, and gradually his pile of chips grew and grew while Gavritt's diminished until all were gone.
How did that make you feel? Asked Lockett. The Doctor strolling in and winning like that.
Annoyed, I said. I remember thinking at the time how Helena's ring seemed like a very distant prospect.
Just annoyed? Not angry?
A bit.
Desperate?
Gavarit was desperate. Bet his wristwatch.
Really? How did that turn out?
I thought back to Gavarit tossing his wristwatch, sleek and shiny, onto the table.
This is worth 100,000 troubles,
Gavarit had said.
What do you say, Doctor? Make things interesting.
The Doctor gazed thoughtfully at the wristwatch.
Why not?
He pushed forward a small mountain of chips.
A mate of mine once said, time is money. Good old Benjamin loved his kites.
He then launched into a marvellous and rambling anecdote about how he and his mate once flew their kites during a dangerous thunderstorm.
And it turned out that petroleum jelly is brilliant for rope burns, not so much for electrocution,
finished the Doctor some long moments later. Gavarit had been glaring at the Doctor, tapping his foot impatiently.
Enough! Let's get this over with.
The Doctor revealed his cards. The Ace, Cavalier, Lady, and Lord of Gems.
A streak,
said Gavarit.
Not enough to beat my four kind black.
He flipped his cards, revealing four sixes.
Not just any streak, Mr. Gavarit. A blue streak.
Gavarit sneered.
Aces are low on weekdays.
Check the time.
We all looked at the watch on the table. 2 minutes past midnight, which made it...
Saturday,
said the Doctor.
Aces are high, and my blue streak beats your four-kind blag, Mr. Gavarit.
Gavarit stared at the Doctor, a muscle in his jaw twitching. I realised what the Doctor had done. By talking, he had distracted Gavarit long enough for midnight to pass so he could win. Doctor won... Gavarit lost, I told Lockett. Game over.
And you?
Broke even.
But that wasn't enough to buy the ring.
I nodded.
Must have been upsetting.
I nodded again.
Because you really wanted to buy that ring, didn't you, Amius?
Where's he going with this? I wondered.
Here's what I don't get. You say you broke even.
Yet we've made inquiries. You purchased a solitaire diamond ring from Lempered Jewellers on Saturday the 14th of December. And we've heard reports that you did a lot of talking in the weeks following. So where did the money come from, Amius? Did you steal it from the doctor?
No. He gave it to me, and Marley.
Gave it to you? Why?
We saved his life.
The doctor had thrown on his coat and deposited his chips into the robot's mouth. The robot swallowed them with a mechanical clunk, then beeped again, mouth open.
Yes, yes, dessert's coming, said the doctor,
feeding it Gavrit's watch. The robot coughed up a thick sheaf of cash, which the doctor stashed in his pocket. He headed for the door when Gavrit spoke.
Tell me how you did it, Doctor.
Did what?
Gavrit clicked his fingers, and Scarface moved swiftly to his side.
Cheated. I don't know how, but you did. No one could be that lucky.
Marley nudged me and pointed to the exit. I nodded, and we made to leave. But the doctor was blocking the doorway. For once, saying nothing.
Come on, Doctor, you like to talk, don't you? Better start now.
With that, Gavrit stood and pulled a pistol.
Don't try to run,
he continued.
Or I'll shoot them.
He nodded at Marley and me. We both froze.
Oh, all right.
The doctor held up a thin metallic rod.
Use this on the robot, just to ensure I got the cards I needed. Couldn't let you win, Mr. Gavrit. I knew what you had in store for the money. Buy a bunch of machine guns and rifles, start a turf war on the south side with the Geary gang. And had you succeeded, innocent people would have died in the crossfire. People minding their own business. Shopkeepers, mums and dads, kids. Caught in the middle of your ugly little fight.
How could you possibly know this?
Demanded Gavrit. He shook his head.
Never mind. Hand over the cash. Now!
How did you save the doctor's life, Amius?
Asked Lockett. Gavrit pulled a gun, demanded the money. Doctor said no. Then Marley, so clever, snatched Garrett's tea, poured it into robot's mouth. Dealer droid Model A went mad, spinning, beeping. I pushed it towards Gavrit and Lackey, bowled them over.
And then?
We ran. We'd raced for the door. Down the stairs, through the lobby, outside, zigzagging through the streets until we got clear. We paused, panting, at the head of an alleyway.
You two are brilliant, said the doctor. I reckon it's only fair you split this.
Outside, Doctor gave his cash to Marley and me, half each.
He kept none for himself.
I shook my head.
Can the doctor verify this? Do you know where he lives? Any contact details?
I shook my head.
So the doctor handed over his winnings. How noble of him. What happened next?
We said thank you. I was so happy. This was a small fortune. More money than I'd ever had in my entire life. Now I could buy Helena a ring that she truly deserved.
Yes, but then what?
Asked Lockett impatiently. I kept my mouth shut. I didn't want to tell this next bit, in case the cops caught up with the doctor and took his screwdriver. The doctor had flourished the metallic rod.
I can disable your tongue chips with my sonic screwdriver. You'll never have to pay to speak again.
I shook my head. Occasionally you heard of people attempting to disable or remove their tongue chip. The results were always painful and unsuccessful.
It's perfectly safe, said the doctor. Who wants to go first? Me!
Marley opened her mouth and poked out her tongue.
The doctor pressed a button on the rod, making the end flash blue. A faint pop came from Marley's chip.
"Okay, Amius, you're next,"
said the doctor. I opened my mouth, dreaming of all the things I could do. An elaborate proposal, a groom speech at the wedding. Maybe I could even sing a duet with Helena.
"There they are!"
Gavarit and Scarface, only a block away and closing fast.
"Quick, this way!"
The doctor pointed to the end of the alley, which was occupied by an odd blue box no bigger than Helena's shoe closet.
"That's a dead end,"
said Marley. She grabbed my hand.
"We're better off going this way."
I didn't need convincing. We raced across the road, with the doctor shouting after us.
"No, no, no, come back! You don't understand."
As we rounded the corner, I heard him yell,
"I'll come back for you, Amius!"
Gavarit appeared. Marley and I ran. Didn't catch us.
"You wouldn't be here if he had," said Lockett. "You might be interested to know that Maxim Gavarit is currently in custody on several charges of tax evasion. Unfortunately for him, he's been unable to answer any of our questions. Seems he's out of cash. Which means the presumption of guilt falls on him. His laryngectomy is scheduled for next Wednesday."
I shivered, almost feeling sorry for Gavarit.
"What happened to the doctor?"
I shrugged.
"Seen or heard from him since?"
I shook my head.
"Okay, so that explains the money. I need to ask you some questions about your involvement with the Garrulous Liberation and the rally at Spreckin Plaza this afternoon."
"Please. Want to call Helena. She'll be worried."
"No. Are you a member of the Garrulous Liberation?"
I nodded.
"When did you join?"
2 weeks ago.
"Have you carried out activities on behalf of the Garrulous Liberation?"
I nodded.
"Describe them."
"Stuck up posters? Organised rallies?"
"Including the one today?"
"Yeah."
"Are you aware the Garrulous Liberation was listed as a banned organisation as of 1st of January this year?"
I nodded.
"Why'd you join, Amius?
You have a clean record, a job, you're getting married. Why risk all that to join a criminal organisation?"
"Not enough."
"Pardon?"
"Not enough to just exist. Not anymore. Wanted to make difference. Make world more equal." The day following the card game, I bought a ring and proposed to Helena. Still had some money left over, which meant for the first time ever, I could afford conversation. But I only needed 4 words that day. "Will you marry me?" She said yes. Oh, I was the happiest man on Skaz that day. But I soon found having words came with its own set of problems. Lena and I started disagreeing over the wedding planning.
"I've chosen salmon for the main course. You don't mind, do you, darling?"
asked Helena. "Actually, I do. Seafood gives me an upset stomach. I thought we were going with beef."
"But salmon is more refined. Surely you can stomach it for one day. Now, I've picked the mango mousse for dessert."
"Really? I'd prefer the chocolate pudding."
"But tropical desserts are in vogue. Why are you being so difficult about this?"
"I'm not being difficult. I just wouldn't mind a say in my own wedding, that's all. I mean, you've chosen everything, right down to my tuxedo."
"There's no need to snap at me, Amius. Besides, I am the bride. Isn't it my right to have the final word?"
But the low point came one evening when I was over at Helena's place for a soiree. Someone told Ariana to turn on the telly to get the 6 o'clock news. And there on the screen was Marley. She stood before a crowd in Spreckin Plaza, loudspeaker at her lips.
"Silence for too long. Lighting liberated from the bondage of the chip. A world where anyone can sing, shout, complain, opine, debate, gossip and gab as much as they damn well please.
The crowd consisted of mostly poor folk, judging from their looks. They liked what Marley was saying, applauding whenever she paused.
Ridiculous. A waste of words. A world without the chips, really. She's only stirring up trouble. After all, people need to know their place. One shouldn't attempt to rise above their station in life,
said Helena's mum. Everyone deserves the right to free speech, I said. Silence fell. Helena's dad set his martini glass on the mantelpiece with an audible chink.
I beg your pardon?
He inquired politely. It's just, a person should be able to say as much as they like. Shouldn't matter how much money they have. Helena elbowed me.
Don't make a fuss, darling.
And what could this rabble have to say that anyone could possibly want to hear?
Asked Helena's dad. They could tell you about the shacks they call home, I felt like saying. The jobs that blister their hands and break their backs, going to bed hungry and sending their children to bed hungry. But Helena's dad was right, in a way. People like him didn't want to hear it. I remained silent.
You see,
said Helena's mum triumphantly,
they don't need words. Leave the talking to the people in charge. The educated, intelligent people who are best placed to run society.
Let the dumb stay dumb,
agreed Helena's dad. I could have said more, but I'd spoken a lot over the past few weeks, and already my bank balance was heading towards zero. I simply strode outside, kicking a watering can, sending it flying. Glib's trying to make the world a better place, I told Lockett. So I joined.
Did you tell your fiancé what you were up to?
Yes, but Helena's blameless. Try to talk me out of it. My tongue chip gave a buzz, signifying that I was down to my last 30 droubles.
Getting back to the rallies, said Lockett. Your friend Marley can certainly draw a crowd, can't she? Want to tell us about today's event?
I pointed at my tongue.
Please, nearly out.
Not my problem.
Attended rally. Marley spoke. People everywhere. Guards moved in. Issued dispersal order. Went home. Didn't see what happened next. That's all. Please. Helena.
Oh, Amius. Lockett smiled unpleasantly. Didn't you wonder why we picked you up this evening at home? A member of the public dobbed you in. Your fiancé, Helena.
My mouth went dry. No, that's not true. But in my heart, I knew otherwise. And with those words, my chip gave a little click. I was out of money. Out of words.
Explain how you organized the rally. How you promoted it and who you told.
I shook my head, pointing at my tongue, but Lockett kept pressing.
Did anyone assist you? Give me their names. It could go easier for you.
I sat there, silent.
At least tell me the whereabouts of Marley Evans.
I shook my head furiously. I'd never give Marley up, even if I had the words.
Not talking? Then I have no choice.
Lockett stood.
Amius Todd, I'm arresting you on charges of conspiracy and sedition. You have the right to remain silent, but that silence may be used against you in a court of law.
No, I tried to say. My lips made the word, but no sound came out. That's what the chip did, effectively switched off your voice box when you ran out of money. Lockett hauled me to my feet and produced a pair of handcuffs.
Hope you have enough words left to instruct your lawyer. Turn around.
I fought back tears of panic. What would happen next? Would they send me to prison? Take away my voice for good? Would I ever see my parents again? My granddad, Marley? The cold steel of the handcuffs bit into my wrists. Then, from outside the room came an odd wheezing sound.
Evening. Pardon the intrusion, but I'm Mr. Todd's legal representative. He's being released into my custody. Special dispensation. Here's the paper.
From the Chief Justice of the Supreme Court? Yes, sir. Let me just remove these cuffs.
Amius! Found you at last. Sorry about the delay. Only meant to be 5 minutes, not 5 weeks. TARDIS got a bit confused. Happens sometimes. Now, it's about time I finally disabled your chip.
Wow. My voice was shaky, but it was back. Thanks, Doctor.
Save the thanks. I have a job for you, Amius Todd.
There was a different air to the Doctor. Quiet anger and determination. He ushered me inside the blue box. To my astonishment, it was not the size of Helena's shoe closet, but rather her whole living room. And there, unconscious in a chair, blanket tucked around her, was Marley. I rushed over and took her hand. Marley, are you okay?
Mild concussion, said the doctor. Bit of bother at the rally today, after you left. Marley copped a baton to the head. I turned up just in time.
I squeezed Marley's hand. I should have ignored the dispersal order and stayed at the rally.
She'll be all right. But out of action for a few hours.
The doctor pulled one of the levers on the console in the centre.
Let's go.
Go where?
Back to Sprechen Plaza, of course. The crowd's reconvening. They'll be expecting a speech. That's where you come in.
Me? But I can't. I'm not used to making speeches. You do it, Doctor. You're great at talking. I'd just be rubbish.
Nah, has to be you, Amius. I'm only a visitor here. This is your battle, not mine.
But I'm only an average bloke. No one's going to listen to me.
Amius, your words are important,
the Doctor insisted.
You can make people listen.
He opened the door. We were on a makeshift stage in Sprechen Plaza. At least 1,000 people filled the square. There were television cameras, people holding up phones, recording. Guards standing on the periphery, shields and batons at the ready. The doctor shoved me gently out onto the stage, towards a microphone. I cleared my throat. Hello? My name is Amius Todd.
Where's Marley?
Yelled someone. She can't make it tonight. Many of the silent crowd gave me the thumbs down sign. Several people dropped their signs and drifted away. Even the guards looked bored. I was losing them already. I threw a desperate glance at the doctor, who nodded encouragingly.
Just listen. Please. For a long time, I believed that words didn't matter. That it was enough for people like me, like us, to shut up and listen to others who could afford to talk. But not anymore. And thanks to my friend, the doctor, I now have a voice.
The doctor raised a hand in acknowledgement.
I reckon lots of you here feel the same. You've so many words inside you, but not enough money to say them. And that's wrong. The only way to fix it is if everyone were rich or if speech was free. And it's not possible for everyone to be rich. Which leaves us with making speech free.
Several people clapped, which gave me the confidence to continue. But the guards edged nearer.
Tonight, I don't just want to speak to you in the crowd. I also want to speak to people who might be watching at home, or the people who make or enforce the laws. Either way, people who can afford plenty of words, who might be asking why Skaz needs free speech. The answer is, it's simply not fair. Without words, there's a lot we can't do. We can't whinge to our wives and husbands when we have a rough day at work. We can't read stories to our children. We can't discuss the football results with our mates. We can't tell our families how much we love them. Without words, we can't properly live. And that's all we want. The right to live the same as you. Some people say that free speech is divisive, and it's true. There might be more arguments. But I bet there'll also be more ideas, more understanding, which can help make us a proper community, a united planet. To you in the crowd, keep pushing for change. And to anyone else watching, please listen to what we're trying to say. And, that's all.
The crowd erupted into cheers. I made my way back inside the blue box, where the doctor shook my hand. And Marley was awake. She hugged me.
You were amazing, Amius.
But there was one thing on my mind. Will it really make a difference, though? Will anyone listen? The doctor grinned and pulled another lever.
Got something to show you two?
He opened the door. We were still in Sprechen Plaza, but it was broad daylight, and the square was filled with people, laughing, chattering, bickering, yelling, conversing. Marley and I turned to the doctor, amazed.
20 years into the future, he told us. You did it. No more chip. Everyone has free speech.
Wait, we've travelled in time,
asked Marley. Is this a trick? I added.
No trick. That's the brilliant thing about words. They have the power to change the course of history.
We watched the scene for some time before the doctor took us back.
Will we see you again?
Asked Marley.
Oh, yes. Next year at the wedding.
Wedding? Not Helena. I couldn't imagine marrying her. Not now.
Well, no, but you never know. Might find someone else.
The doctor glanced at Marley.
Watch out for my best man speech. It's gonna be a cracker.
He closed the door, and the blue box just faded away, accompanied by that wheezing noise. Marley and I gaped at each other. Ironically, we were both speechless. We walked away, supporting each other, as she was still unsteady on her feet. And I knew that in time, we would have a lot to say, both to each other and to the world.